So the test, I suppose, for meeting, the car test for meeting to stop is an hour. I do know a story from a colleague of mine, and I'll never name who, but there was an exam used to go out for like 2-3 hours, and it was far too long, and there was like going AWOL. There has to be time, there has to be a period over it. And what I say to candidates is that, you know, we need to drive a certain amount of miles in a certain amount of time, a certain amount of minutes. So as long as we do that, and I normally cover that because of diversions, where suddenly we're going off piste and we've now added a big loop, or on a bike test, but because we don't use radios, we have to signal through our indicators, they miss a signal and miss a left turn or right turn. I said, what you do is make it a bit longer than it needs to be. That's for me. I generally put these things for a good hour in mine. So my test will always start in a car park, public place for safety, just to make sure it's comfortable. I normally do it not far from here. I've got a sports centre, a massive car park, because not only does it allow me to meet someone safely, but it allows me to start thinking about manoeuvring. So, you know, if I get there early enough, I can actually watch the candidate come in the car park and then see how many shunts it takes to get into a bay. Good idea of how the test is going to go. I then go introduce. We've also got the normal thing, so all the paperwork hopefully is done before. What I tend to do now is send out the declaration. And that really came about from the fact that we've got so many online documents, MOTs, insurance online, so it's very hard, for example, to check this really realistically. So that's why we declare. Declaration sent beforehand, I get that back, that's fine. I don't do a lot of notes as I go. I have a briefing, and my briefing just really is there to put the candidate at ease. I think it may differ between the examiners you have. I don't know, mine's fairly much format. I do it as part of my day job. You know, I explain where we're going to go, explain what I'm going to do, explain how I get the directions. So the one thing I always said for every test is not a navigation exercise. I don't expect someone to have a memory test either. So for a car test, because we're sat next to each other, I just give the route within easy sight. So I'll give them the next junction, the next roundabout, the next exit, the next direction of travel. I always say it the same way. I'll start the roundabout, go first, second, third exit towards either the A35 or towards Wimborne, so it's nice and clear. I give them plenty of time. So I don't want someone to say, what was that? As they're trying to plan an approach and actually deal with what's in front of them. So that's really sort of how we do it. And then we get for a drive and it's down for candidate to show what they've learned and what the observers have done to get to that point. I suppose we're fortunate that we don't have many examiners, so there shouldn't be many idiosyncrasies, shouldn't be many differences. The observers know what to expect, the observers know the format. We don't, you know, I change my test routes regularly, so whilst they might know where I meet and finish, the test route will change, and it changes sometimes because of the nature of the road and any problems there may be. And realistically then, I tend to sit in the car and let the candidate do the job. Now, one thing I would always say is, and it's something that I notice, you know, after you've given some of the good news, I don't let people wait. I tell them then and there that they pass or fail. It's no problem saying, right, give us half an hour, and you're writing away, and there's lots of her and her, and they still don't know whether they pass or fail, because that's the important part. That's what they really want to find out. So I always tell them. And one of the funny things is when someone says, oh, God, I really wasn't as bad as I thought. Well, that's a good thing. But what should I bought my own car? And I say to them, well, what car did you bring then? Because you're with me. Oh, this is my partner's, my wife's, my son's, my husband. Okay, what car have you got? Oh, it's much nicer than this. Well, what have been that car then? So I've done the test in little Seats and Fiesta, all sorts of things, because they think they need to have a little manual car to show their skill, and then they've got something like really sexy at home, a Porsche or a Teddy. I think, well, that'd be a much nicer car to go around in, especially if it's this time of year with the air conditioning. But I think there's this thing like, oh, I need to be able to show what I can do. I said, well, you can show that in any car. Most of our, you know, driving in policing is going to end up in an automatic at this rate. Now, we're buying automatic panel cars. That's what the contract is. We've got automatic traffic cars. You know, all our advanced drivers are tested in an automatic vehicle. We don't have manual cars at that level because no one makes them anymore. So it is one of those odd things. So if you have associates who say, what car should I train you? Well, the car you're going to drive, the car you're used to. You know, one of the things we look at is, you know, can you use technology? If you've got it, well, why would you not use it? It's there. It's an aid to you to help you with your driving. And the more you know about the car, the more I'm impressed by it. It's no good if I sit there and say, it's quite warm, hang open the windows, and you know, oh, okay. They've got aircon. It's not my car, right? Because I'm just going to get hot. hot and bothered then. It would be much better, therefore, to have the car that the associates trained with, that they're comfortable with. Then they decide they want to do it in a manual car because they think that's better for them. I have no problem. I've done it in cars, I've done it in vans. I've not done a bus yet, but I've done it in all sorts of vehicles, old and new. So if you know one guy, he said, just got to put in the garage quickly because he had to just, I mean, he was doing that. There was something about the car. It wasn't illegal, it wasn't bad. But I was sort of thinking, okay, actually, he was a very good driver. He was a really good driver. But it's when I do often, because it was his car, it was a very old vehicle and had its own little nuances that needed fitted into his set. So, what were we looking for on a test then? So, obviously, the standard set. When I started doing this, we used to scale things 1 to 5. And before the first came in, of course, you could get lots of ones and it was just a pass, a pass, a pass. Obviously, we know that the WASP have different grading, and I think the first is a good idea. It does allow us as examiners and as an organisation to recognise those candidates who've done really well. Masters, again, offers the opportunity for someone to go and really shine as a driver. I'm going to say something controversial, and I don't mind saying it, but I know that some people probably get a shock in Imbra, but there are drivers and riders in the IM who are as good as people I work with. They are proficient, almost professional people who devote an awful lot of time and an awful lot of their energies to mastering their craft, whether that is driving or riding. And they can be as good as anyone else who gets paid to do it or gets paid to teach it. Because up to 60 miles an hour, it is exactly the same thing. The books are the same, the techniques are the same, you can even buy the same vehicles. It's only because in my day job, we are allowed to challenge ourselves and to test the skills above the speed limit, because we have a big exemptions for that, and that includes police training, that we're able to see how people operate at a higher speed. And most people, I'd argue, who are competent drivers can pass a police response course. If you look at speeds up to about 80, 90 miles an hour, most people have the computing power in themselves to be able to deal with the situation. It's interesting, we're just looking at virtual reality, and that will give people at the south maybe at some point the opportunity to experience a police blue light driving this one, because you'll get to sit there in a VR headset as we do a drive and as we teach people to do it. So it does mean that people can consider, there's actually no difference. Systems are the same, how you observe, how you convert, how you do things, exactly the same. The only thing is that the red light, if we may go through the red light in a controlled manner, we might go on the offside and approach the red light. That's the only difference. And my experience of it, and I've been in it for some time now, is that as we push officers and people beyond that sort of 60, 70, 80, 90 miles an hour into the hundreds, that's when we start to see problems. Because at that point, our brains have been dealing with something which is not natural. It's not something we've grown up with. Unless you've been a racing driver, we've not sat with our parents or our siblings or whatever at 100 miles an hour, because that's against the law. So it is as we progress further up that we then see people start to struggle. And most people who fail advanced police driving fail because they don't have the computing technology here to assimilate the information that's going through the eyeball, basically. We all the same. It's how we deal with things. The difference between, I suppose, a pilot who drives a Hercules in the RAF and someone who drives a Typhoon is their ability to multitask at high speed in high demand situations that sets them apart. But everything else below that's all the same. We all start the same chipmunks or whatever, smaller plane, and we are no different. So our drivers come to us, we train them. And what I would say, the first week of our response course, we're not going that far. We're talking about system driving, we're talking about their ability to be able to apply the system correctly. One thing I would say, and all our courses start the same way, where I live here is a suburb. And literally, if you go out the back now, there'll be a lot of learners doing left and right turns. There's some lovely big roads. I'm sure every town's got an area where the learner drivers go to be tested, they go to be shown how to make left and right turn. We do the same thing. So all our drivers get in that car and I say, right, we're going down to where I live, we're going down to Broadstone, to the area here, and we're going to go make some left and right turns. Really? Yeah. And I think they expect that we're going to be in a car going fast really quickly. But let's say to them, and it's something to think about with associates, you can apply the system quickly until you can do it slowly. Because all we're going to do is ask you to take this much time and work and condense it into, obviously, you know, to the speed, into maybe a smaller package. You need to adjust your brain and your thought process to be able to do that. It's not natural. When people come to us, they've all got a system of driving, it's just that they aren't very good. And I'm sure it's the same with your associates. They all turn up, they can all drive, they can all drove there, hopefully, safely, and they all have their own little nuances. And what we tend to do is start from scratch, look at their driving, go and do some left and right turns so we can allow them to decide and readjust their ability to assess speed and distance. Because as we get faster, that's really critical. So, you know, if you imagine on a sort of bigger A road, we're doing 70, 80, 90 miles an hour. You know, that's a close speed of 150 miles an hour without going to the public. That's something you need to be able to deal with. You need to be able to assess gaps. You need to be able to assess, have people seen us as we go into response. And for those who don't know, no one in police driving can put the blue lights on and start to respond until they've done at least 2 weeks of system driving. So we don't even let our staff use the blue lights and it's come across an accident before they've proven that they can drive a system drive at a high level. So we do a three-week course. The first 2 weeks is system driving. It's teaching the application. It's teaching overtaking. The one thing that we do have, probably over an IM test that I do in a car, is because we can see the speed limit, overtaking is a bit easier. We've all been sat there, I'm sure, with an associate thinking, but I can only grab another 10 miles an hour to get past this vehicle. And we're on that sort of cusp. And we are still an organisation, so therefore we have to be very careful about what we do. It's the image, it's the last thing one is the bad press. You know, for my examiner or my observer said, oh, so I can do 80, and that was going to cancel, it's fine, it would be the wrong thing to say, the wrong thing to do. So that's a bit easier for us. But because it's easier, we also need to make sure people can do it safely. Because as we're progressing from A to B, and particularly the county forces, where officers may do 20, 30 miles on response, I think the longest response job I did was actually on a motorcycle, and it was from Bournemouth Police Station to Scotland Yard for someone who was in custody. It was a high profile incident, and it literally was, you were a blue light dispatch rider. This needs to be there within the hour, and it was. So that's the sort of thing we're looking at. But going back to the IM then, so what we want is a route which allows people to demonstrate what they've learned. A route that has a mix. So it will have jumps, it will have turns left and right, it will have roundabouts. There's some nice roads that I have in easy reach here where you, if you're driving at the natural speed limit, you're driving at a high level because they are challenging country B roads. There's some bends, there's some straights. One of mine particularly has what I call my system sort of tester, and that is a 60 mile an hour, fairly fast approach into an acute 90 degree left hand bend. So what we're looking for is, has someone started to apply the system based on observations early enough to make this maneuver safe? And if there's a fault that often comes up before anyone starts asking, what's the often fault? Can't bite, it's people leaving their speed phase, information that the speed phase is too late. And they're now trying to do this much work in that much space. It doesn't happen, physics takes over. And it's sort of sat there going, well, I'm going to grab the handle, it looks a bit rude, but we need to start breaking that. Now, rarely as an examiner have I had to say something to an associate in regards to safety. In anything in a car test, I'm just thinking you're willing them to sort of make a bit of progress. It's always great when, you know, we're on 60 mile an hour road and we're doing 60 miles an hour, we're making safe progress. Because what I always say to people is, if you're doing the speed limit, I can't ask for any more. So if I look at progress, tick, that's 100%. If you're doing 30 and a 30 and all the other speed limits, then that is 100% progress. I can't ask for any more with that. If we're plotting along at 45, one has to question, have we actually made that transition from your normal driving, what we're after, which is an advanced level drive? And probably not, because you're not comfortable with the car, in which case, go back to my one of my opening bits about being the car you enjoy driving. Are you comfortable with what you've been taught? Are you happy with me sat here to show that you are actually making that transition to advanced driving? And you know, the argument of course, eco doesn't work because it's time and place for eco driving. But what here is someone to show that they can actually drive a car at the speed limit with full control, with an idea of what's happening around them, with clear observations that match the road. And it's safe to do. A lot of the roads I use are roads that I use for police training, so I don't have RC can travel down them. It should be safe for an associate to demonstrate a driver at 50, 60 miles an hour that can actually drive the speed limit. So that's the thing. So if you come across a 90-degree bend, what we're looking for then is the observation, the plan, anticipation, and the fact that at some point you're going to have to break. When I first did my bike training as a police officer, and it's one of those things that I often say, there was one of these silly old sort of notions about don't show brake light. Don't show brake light, you're doing it. And I'm thinking, well, okay. And so we all went around cheating, holding the gears too long and sort of crashing through the gearbox. The reality is just nonsense. Yeah. And what I would say to someone is that if I'm in the car or I'm on a motorbike following, if I'm breaking your knot, what if this is wrong? And it isn't me, because I know what we should be doing here. So it's the same thing when you're teaching someone. If you sit there going, well, I'll be braking now, you're probably actually quite close to where the associate should be braking. Now, while they've got a really sporty car, well, next question is, how are you going to get around this junction, this corner? And what I would do then is just look for the cheat. So on a motorcycle, I'm looking for the left foot to go click, take a gear, because now they've basically rewritten the book, they've got a gear for speed, or, you know, we're going to get a huge late minute break, break your overlap in the car, and it's going to be fairly unsightly. The car's going to bounce, it's not going to feel particularly pleasant. And then I've then got thinking, well, did we actually see the sign? Did we see the road marking? Did we understand where the road's going? Did we watch the car in front of us go around with the speed? You know, all the signs were there. Have we been able to simulate that and actually demonstrate that we're driving an advanced level? So we move off. I generally start in an urban area, and I take some of the A roads. The A roads, depending on where you live, can obviously be fairly busy. Overtaking is one of those things that on a bike test, I would probably see 70% of the time, a car test, 5-10% of the time, because there has to be the right conditions. It's just the nature of the beast that a motorcycle can pass things a little bit quicker without breaking the speed limit, and it has a bit more flexibility. A car's always slightly harder, particularly with that sort of ballpark of 55 miles an hour. There's a colleague of mine who's from the A to the M's, has a very good saying, it's one I use often now, that whilst we don't set off to break the law, if we just start a manoeuvre, we need to complete it safely. I use the same sort of guidance allowances that I do as a police officer. We allow 10% either way for variance and speeders. I'm not looking at someone's shoulder, they're going to make an overtake and it's safe. I'd rather get on with it and demonstrate what they've learned and actually completely to, and then I can make a decision whether actually that was appropriate. It may well be that they've got themselves in a terrible situation, they're trying to make progress, they're trying to show what they've learned, and they've talked themselves into it. We see it all the time. In police driving, you know, we teach overtaking, it's a core skill, it's how you make progress through traffic, it's how you get to where you need to get to, particularly on a fast A road. But it does mean that officers often feel under pressure. And what I always say to people is, you drive to the conditions. You know, I generally start my briefing, you know, traffic will be as we find it, the weather is as it is now. So if we go out in the winter particularly, and it's icy, well, I'm trying to avoid the routes, but you drive to conditions. If you ever go further west of Dorchester, there's an area called Aske as well. It's infamous in our county. It has its own microclimate. It could be snowing there now. It really is that strange compared to the rest of the county. And I can remember once sitting in when I was an operation officer in our base, and we had winter sun as we have today. Lovely, clear day, crisp, you know, about 5 to 6 degrees, but, you know, chilly, but a beautiful day. And our message system just goes bing, 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 like off the scale. And what it was a blizzard that blown in about a 5 mile radius on this place where Aske was. It had its own microclimate. And I always say to people there, I took an advanced police riding test through there once, and we were down to 15 miles an hour because it was fog. And that officer passed an advanced level police where we expect officers to make maximum progress. Because that was a safe speed at that time. So anyone can pass an advanced driving test driving at the speed limit. Everyone drive at the advanced driving test driving below the speed limit if that's your appropriate speed. You know, a colleague of mine was a bit blunt sometimes. I'm not like that, but if I go back a long time ago, and I'm sure some people may know examiners a bit like, you know, he used to say, go too fast, failure. Go too slow, failure. Put the car in danger, failure. And it was a little bit, okay, in policing terms. But the point was that actually there are times when you need to be travelling at a speed at which you could stop. You need to be travelling at a speed at which you could do things. And whilst it's rare on a car test, what I would say is I have found it more of a thing when we do some of the mature driving assessments. I used to do some of those, and I would be a blunt and say it's the scariest thing I ever did. I used to have hair before I started those, because you've got a lot of people there who've been driving a long time, they've got some bad habits, have never done an advanced driving course, and they're asked to go and teach and look at their driving. Normally it's part of a referral But yes, I've often had students say, you need to slow down, and you need to slow down right now when you're crewing down a small back lane, somewhere in a village called Cranbourne, not far from where I live, in a Volvo 740, and it was like a wrecking race. But when it comes around the corner, we are going to have a crash here. And so then I have to take charge. But it's very rare on a car test, I think, if anybody gets it. Say, I mean, as I said, you know, I hate your willing people who get on with it sometimes, not to be afraid to show what they've learned and actually demonstrate what really they've been taught by the observer. So, I suppose the other thing to talk about is commentary, because that's a contentious issue, sometimes issue, or spoken thought now, I think is the way, isn't it? So, years ago, I was doing a lecture to some baby drivers. And I was in a car with them, and we were just demonstrating police driving. And the officer said, you talk very fast. And I do talk fast. I said, I know, I drive fast. I've got to keep up with the words. That's the problem. And that's what commentary is about. But we use it as a teaching aid. So we use it as a guide to what you're looking at, what's in front, how are we going to deal with this. That's why commentary is developed. It allows us to prepare officers for the reality of when they start pursuing people, they're going to be talking and driving. And it is a fine art to be able to talk at high speed and drive at high speed without one affecting the other. I did some input to that. I said there, you know, the difference between our officers, our response level and our advanced level, as to in a pursuit. And I asked the dispatchers, our control dispatchers, and they said, the advanced level far much more calmer. It's a bit like that for Sunday afternoon stroll. There's no tension in the voice. There's no alarm. It's just very businesslike. It's very to the facts. Very, we are doing this. This is our plan, because that's what they're taught to do. Because we are dealing with high risk individuals. Sometimes we're dealing with a lot of sort of risky business, for want of a better word. That we need to make sure that we are demonstrating that we are managing that as safely as possible. Because a third party is someone we've got no control of. What we want to do from a commentary for an IANTA is the same thing. Let them demonstrate what it is they're doing, and let them demonstrate that they can do it without it affecting their drive. So this is a good example. So I had someone who'd gone for comfort tests, was never quite sure how many drives they've had with an observer. And we went off, and literally the commentary just started going blah, 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 a bit like a highway sometimes, and the drive just took a nosedive, and the drive got to the point where I actually cut short and said, we'll go back. And one of the associates said, so who's talking commentary? Oh, I found this guy on TV, a guy called Chris Gilbert, who I know, who's quite well known, some of your members might know. He's a former head instructor who does talks and does videos. Okay, and he taught you how to do commentary. Well, no, I watched this video. I thought that's what I would do. Right, you're not Chris Gilbert, though, are you? Oh, no, obviously not. Okay, so do you understand how he got to that point? Do you understand how his commentary was developed? How many years it's taken for someone to talk about that? Oh, so what they were trying to do was to try and, I wouldn't say impress is the right word, but they had this vision that I expected everyone to be able to do a commentary like Chris Gilbert. I said, no, what I want you to do is demonstrate your driving isn't effective when you're talking, and that your talking is relevant. It's no good when talking about a junction 5 miles ago, but through that, what's happening in front? Where are you looking? What's happening? How's the traffic? You know, what's developing in front? What are you going to do about it? That's what a commentary should be. And I would never expect, unless they had a lot of time and they had a natural idea, an associate to be able to deliver a commentary at the level I see in my day job. It's not going to happen. I saw officers who in 3 weeks of their initial training still can't say much more than junction, traffic light, going up, you know, little sound bites of information. It's different at the advanced level. They should have been able to make it, because that's what we're testing. But certainly for an IAM test, you know, they are not going to score well if they're just trying to talk about stuff with talking safe. It's got to be relevant. They can quote things like bits of roadblock, bits of the highway. That's fantastic. But actually, what I've always preferred is, what are you telling me about? What's happening in front of you? What's factual? So I can see the car over the dip with the brake light sign. So I anticipate there might be danger. I just think I saw a flashing amber light, so it could be a traffic cone. There's one crossing I know, because a friend of mine told me, where if the light's flashing, the cows are crossing, and it's on a pain, and it's in the middle of nowhere. So I know that, it's my little tidbits of information. So things like that are great, but actually what I don't want them to do is try and talk so much they forget how to drive a car. The only thing to say is, of course, it's voluntary. So could you pass a first without a commentary? Yes. Yes, you can, because if you're driving that good, then actually why shouldn't that be recognised? It always adds to it. And what I tend to do to someone is, and I always offer the option, is that there's two ways you can do it. I can give you a nudge and say, would you like to give me some commentary, please, about halfway through the drive, when it's all settled down. Or you can start talking from the minute we turn the wheels. And some people like talking the minute they turn the wheels. And they will just talk. So at the junction, checking, looking at mirrors, looking at this, looking at this. So that's fine. And it's whatever they're most comfortable with, it's their test. It's not my test. I'm there on behalf of the IM. I'm not the governor, the Queen's representative. I represent the organisation. The test is their test. They've put the hours in, they've done the hard work with the observers. They're there because they're ready to pass the test. We're willing to pass the test, and as long as they make it stand, they will. But actually, I'm not there to put barriers up, I'm not there to make it very hard. So, commentary, we can either start, or it can just be an invitation, and I then say, thanks so much, it's really nice. You can continue now, or you can stop 5 minutes, and then hopefully at that point, they're in the drive, about midway, it's nice and relaxed.